is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan. This is our Globalist in Plain Sight show, and I am honored today to have with us my colleagues and Todd Wood, our founder and CEO, Bill Quinn, and our guest, Kevin Jenkins, an old friend of the networks and American Conversation panels. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christine. Good to see you guys again.
So
you're having a great summer, at least end of the summer anyway.
Well, it's an exciting end of the summer because today, it's the weekend before the Democratic convention kicks off. Everybody's in Chicago. The police are giving all the press the security briefings. The balloons are being hoisted up to the top of the ceiling. And let's just have a whip around of what we think is going to happen. I mean, it's at the United Center, which I think is kind of interesting because United is one of those corporations that mandated vaccinations and told their employees, even if they received religious exemptions or medical exemptions in the summer of 2021, that they were denied their 401ks. And that was before Canada had denied the truckers their the money in their bank accounts about 6 months later. So I think the setting is kind of interesting. I get a kick out of it having covered COVID and interviewed a lot of the guys at United. But there's a theme out there, and they're going to be expecting some demonstrations, the pro-Hamas, the pro-Israel, in light of, you know, the talks that are going on. Todd, you've been talking to people in Israel. What's your take on the ground for what do you think is going to happen with these groups?
I think there'll be the usual suspects and riots going on. But what I find really not shocking, but insightful is the mainstream media coming against Kamala in the last few days. You had CNN, Washington Post, New York Post, all of them coming out against her policies. And I find they don't do anything unless they're told to. So the question is why? Why are they coming out against her right now? And so what does that tee up for the convention? I find that extremely interesting. And that's my big takeaway this week and what I've been seeing. But yes, I think there'll be the usual Israeli protests, et cetera.
Kevin, you, the last time we had the convention in Chicago was 1968, Al Gore, Bill Clinton re-election. It was kind of calm and cool. It was a coronation at that point in time. What's your take?
Well, it's going to be rough for them in Chicago. Chicago is the epicenter of all things that are bad. I mean, the crime is busting from the seams, the illegal immigration, the Black community is rising up. Black men are saying, listen, we're not moving any forward politically with a party that never didn't value them from the beginning. So there's a lot of stuff going on in Chicago. I mean, I don't know how they're going to handle it. But right now, Black Chicago in particular is in a up. I mean, they're in a storm right now because they're like, look, you're coming to our city while you're pushing us out. So I just think it's going to be a very interesting time for the convention. I think that people are listening for both groups to come up with something tangible for their group, and particularly the Black community. So I've been having discussions all around the country with Black men, and they're like, okay, it's time for us to weigh back in and start to figure out where we want to go politically in the future. I think that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing at all. And it's happening all over the country. I'm talking to guys from Chicago, Boston, California, Detroit, Newark. I mean, they're all on. They're rotating 10 and 20 at a time on these calls. And I think it's great to have that discussion. And I think that's what's scaring everyone else, that Black men are now saying, listen, we're not going to be bystanders and watch these policies that have been destroying our community for decades. We're just saying enough is enough. And I think that's a good thing for America.
Well, today we have Kamala and Walz in Pittsburgh. We have Trump and Wilkes-Barre. I mean, it's happening right now as we're on the air. Bill, what do you think that means in terms of Pennsylvania? I mean, 2 days ago, Kamala was ahead by, I don't know, 3 or 4 points. Now everybody's saying it's a toss-up. I mean, obviously within 4 or 5 points, and it's too early because we haven't even gotten to the debates yet.
So it's interesting you bring up Pennsylvania. We just saw a report overnight that suggests that certain factions or parts of what many people would have thought was the GOP seem to be breaking for Kamala. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of picking up this tone of folks operating kind of under the water level for a period of time and now maybe emerging with their, you know, their real intent, if you will. So are these real GOP people? Are they, is it some faction within them? Is it something beyond that? We don't know. But there is this odd tone right going on right now of trying to manipulate the vision of what's going on, and especially with the Harris campaign. We saw things this week with, you know, created pictures, created video. And to Kevin's very good point, I think in Chicago, that's going to be particularly difficult because you're going to have a lot of media on the ground, folks, you know, traditional media. I'm hoping a lot of folks like us who are more about, hey, let's tell the truth. Let's show what's really going on. And I think that they may have I'll call it a management nightmare on their hands to portray good things going on in the way that they wish them to, and avoid showing the stuff that's, you know, that they probably want to shy away from, which may be a lot more litmus test of the real feeling on the ground there in Chicago.
Let's talk about the illusion of how we got to where we are right now in Chicago, because since June 27th, you know, with Biden's disastrous performance at the debate with Trump, a lot happened. We know that the powers that be, who are the donors, put the congressional and senatorial races at risk because they were going to withhold the money unless Biden stepped down. And then he was forced to step down. And instead of having an open convention, which Kevin, you know, Bobby Kennedy had said, let's have an open convention. And of course, you know, the Democratic powers that be said no. Biden turned around and he endorsed Kamala to carry the torch. She got Tim Walz, who was head of the rules and bylaws at the convention, to come on board as her vice president. And now the lineup is going to be, you know, the goodbye kiss to Biden on Monday night. And Kamala and Walz are going to be campaigning as of, you know, 2 hours ago, I was told, on the road until a Wednesday night when Walz does his traditional, Walz does his traditional VP address and Kamala does hers on the fourth night. What does that tell you? Because we know that Bill Clinton and Hillary and Obama are going to be addressing the convention as well? Is this sort of like the meat packers come in and say, okay, boys and girls, you know, we're with you?
I don't know. I'm going to be as surprised as anybody else. I don't know what's going on, but I know one thing, but they better come with a better message than they have now. I just think that people are not listening to it anymore. People are not fooled by this anymore. People are saying, listen, you had enough time to accomplish this. You didn't get it accomplished. We were talking about inflation. You didn't address that. That's become a moral hazard for us in America. You were talking about food prices. You didn't address that. Now that's a big issue in America. Gasoline is a big issue in America. Education, the crumbling of our education system in America, that's the issue. People want to hear tangible things. People want to know, how are you going to resolve the issues in my day-to-day life? They don't care about the wars anymore. They don't care about the politics. They care about, how can I feed myself? How can I protect my family from this government? How can I preserve my body sovereignty? They don't want to hear anything. I travel a lot. So people are very, very coarse about this. They don't want to hear any political speak. They want to know, what are you specifically going to do for me and my family and my group and my community? And that's the pushback. People don't want to hear all of this other magical stuff that just randomly just evolved in the last couple of weeks about how great these individuals are. They want to know, what are you going to do for us?
Does it make a difference? Does race make a difference with Kamala Harris, whether she's Asian or Black or anything among the Black community?
I don't think that's an issue. I mean, people are making it an issue. I think people need to just be focused. I think what we're trying to get everybody to stay focused on is policy, and policy. All of the other stuff is just noise. Right. But we got to get people to focus on what's real for them, like the mothers, single mothers. I mean, you know, giving them a tax credit for child care, that's not enough because they can't afford child care at all. If you even gave them a tax credit, you couldn't afford it. Families are in pain in this country, and that's what people want to hear. How are you going to fix America? How are you going to fix the roads? How are you going to make prices cheaper for us when we go to the supermarket? How are you going to lower gas? And do we have elected officials that really care about us? Because what we see now in America is that the corporatocracy controls us at every level. The managerial class has been brilliant in managing chaos in the marketplace. So we won't get to have these kinds of conversations, no matter if you're white, Black, purple, green, or orange. I mean, we all need to get past these cultural wars and start to really figure out how to save this country, because right now we're in jeopardy.
So are we back to it's the economy, stupid signs?
I think Kevin's right. I think people are worried about survival at this point. And it's not just the economy, it's crime, it's everything. Go down the list, you know, the future of their children, literally the future of their family, the future of their legacy is at risk. And so that's what's going on. You asked Christine how we got here. Polling is a big part of that. And I just want to put a big quick plug into CDM Big Data Poll polling. I'm going to show a quick, we spent probably close to $100,000 in 22 in that cycle, polling different states. We did 6 polls, and we actually moved the needle for Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. The polls were showing him down 5. We came in with a very accurate poll with Rich Barris, one of the best in the business, and showed him up 5, and everybody had to come up. So I think we were instrumental in getting Ron Johnson elected in Wisconsin. We're going to start doing some more polls into this cycle. I will put a quick plug in. They're very expensive, and we're spread thin managing this entire network. So please go to cdm.press, top right corner, and support us however you can to help continue the polling. And I think we can make a big difference going into the election.
You know, when I was looking at the lineup for each of the daytimes, which are not on camera, it's every caucus you can possibly imagine that's going to be meeting during the 4 days in Chicago. Plus, they're going to have all the corporate parties, you know, behind the scenes every night after the convention folds, and during the day, they're going to have the receptions. But I thought it was interesting when the DNC put out the themes. The border is not one of the themes that they're going to be talking about. And I haven't seen the final list of who's going to be speaking, but it'd be interesting to see if they bring out somebody and say, oh, the border's just fine. Because they don't want Kamala, you know, they're denying that Kamala has been the border czar who has failed. But I'm interested to know, are we going to still see that going in, you know, 80 days from now? Because I have a tendency to believe that we will.
You mean you're talking about the border itself, the issue?
The border, the immigration, the crime, the pockets of people.
illegal immigration in Black America is number one. Number one issue, illegal immigration.
Explain, give more, expand well, that a little bit, Kevin, for the audience.
Let me give you some perspective here. Black Americans are already operating as a bottom class in this country because of the socioeconomic conditions that they're in at this present moment. So when you talk about illegal immigration, you're talking about 20 million people coming into a country that basically don't have the right to be here, that take benefits from Black Americans. That's a serious issue.
They have people living in New York in the hotels. They have people in Chicago. They have people in the rural areas of Wisconsin. So we know they're feeling the impact of the immigrants in the schools and in the social services.
Right. And, you know, and they talk, that's the biggest topic in the Black community in the country right now. That's the number one issue, illegal immigration. And they see that the Republican Party is at least prepared to have a bigger conversation to preserve, you know, the balance of equity in these communities right now. Because right now, illegal immigrants are coming into this country, coming into their towns while their sons are still locked up on marijuana charges. Now, so the illegal immigrant comes into the town, they get all of the benefits, they get extra benefits, they get all of the services, and the poor people that live in those towns get nothing. They don't get anything. And that's how they see it. It's not just about the jobs. It's not just about the perception. It's about the fact that they haven't been allowed to come in here as a criminal class. This is what they say in the Black community, and get the full benefit and the full protection of this country. That's offensive. When Black Americans are still fighting for their full citizenship. That is a very sensitive issue. That is going to stop a swath of Black Americans not to vote. And that's going to it's going to position a bunch of Black men and people to have a different opinion about this to vote. And they're going to be voting Trump's way. They're not going to be voting the other way. I've been tracking these polls. I've been looking at them. And I'm saying to myself, there is no way in Pennsylvania she's up by five. See, I tell people, be careful with the polls. Because that's a perception issue, too. I think it's swinging. If you go to Philadelphia, if you go into the streets of Philadelphia, they're not talking about the Democratic Party. They're talking about the Republican Party. They're talking about the homeless. They're talking about the illegal immigration. They're talking about the lack of job opportunities. And a party that has been they've been voting for 50 to 60 years never gave them the opportunity to get that leg up that they always talked about. And I got to tell you, that's a big issue. It's not about focusing on the presidential candidates. It's focusing on the fact that we have to come up with a better business strategy on how we deal with both of these parties. And I think there's a big swing towards Donald Trump right now. And if he could just stay focused on those issues, he'll be fine. He will preserve his opportunity to become the president. If he deviates from that and takes on these personal issues, that's not going to work. We need to stay focused on those big core issues that are people that are impacting people in their personal lives. And that would be my message to him. That would be my message to Bobby. That would be my message to anybody that is going to be a game changer or disruptor in this political system. I think Bobby had the greatest opportunity to capture the Black vote, but he missed that opportunity because Trump understood it, that he should have that deeper conversation with the Black community that Bobby didn't have. It was Bobby's for the taking. And that's one of the things I wanted to get to all of the people that were working with him to make sure they can, because it's still, I don't know if the opportunity still avails itself, but he should be having that conversation anyway.
Well, I think he's been trying to. I think he's been so hammered with so much misinformation, disinformation about him.
Yeah.
But you know, Bobby has been an effective wrecking ball outside of government, and and God knows, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, in the fall. But Bill, let me ask you something, because you're down in Georgia.
Go ahead, and then I want to weigh in on your previous question, too, but go right ahead.
Well, go ahead. Well, go ahead and weigh in on that.
Okay, great. So 2 points on this. One, I think your initial question was, will this remain? Will this immigration or illegal immigration thing remain center through the coming months? I believe it absolutely will for a couple of reasons. One is, as Kevin has already said, it has direct effect and direct perception through all communities, not just, you know, not just various sectors of the populace. Two, there is more information coming out about just how bad this problem is and will be supported by a couple of productions that are being done now, documentaries that show both in video and with very precise data, just how bad this problem is. I'll give you an example. Michael Yon has a portion of a video that shows part of camps that have been built down near the Darien Gap, which many people realize is the gateway from South America up through Central America. And those camps are sponsored by the U.S. and Europe, at least in part. They actually have
the
these
UN.
Little flags.
And the UN.
And so there are reports that Mayorkas himself has been down there and been spotted facilitating these kinds of activities. When people get a broader sense of what that means, I absolutely believe that this will land on broad ground between now and the election.
Yeah.
Two, we are hearing the exact same feedback, I believe, or at least a portion of it, that you just relayed, Kevin, and that is folks are looking at the alternatives and they're saying, you know, this isn't about a party anymore. This isn't about the, you know, a party that I might have believed in, you know, a number of decades ago, but that has not fulfilled what they've said they would do for me or my family. But I look at an individual, Trump in this case, and he's talking straight. He has fulfilled what he said he would do in the past. And he is talking about issues that affect me here and now and my family right now. And not focusing just on the stuff that's elsewhere in the world. It's perhaps important, but I've got to make sure that my kids can eat and that my family is safe. And then we can deal with the rest of the stuff if we need to. And I'm hearing that loud and clear here in Atlanta.
Yeah. Wow.
So one of the topics that's not on the podium this week, so far at least I haven't seen it and I don't expect that I will see it, is medical autonomy, medical freedom. Kevin, how big a topic is that in the Black
community? I think that's the quiet sell. That's a sleeper sell. Those are the people that, you know, would attract to Bobby and also would attract to Trump, even though we have issues with Trump based on some of the positions he had taken on this whole COVID narrative when he was the president. But I think they're forgiven him for that. But I believe that's the quiet sell. I believe that's the voter that no one really can figure out, because I think they're going to probably, if Bobby stays there, they're going to vote for Bobby. And if Bobby moves out of the way, they're going to vote for Trump. They're never going to go the other way. I mean,
in all due respect, Trump has come out and said he would never go along with mandated vaccinations.
And that's a great thing. And that's absolutely a super thing. But I mean, we have forgiven him in a way, because he's actually coming out and saying all those things, but that was a very painful situation for America. And that was a very painful situation for those families and all of us that were personally attacked for standing up against an industry that was hell-bent on destroying us. So I just believe that right now, you know, I just think there's an opportunity for that sleeper cell, those people in the country. There's millions of them. I mean, patriots and medical freedom that are sitting on the sideline waiting to see how this falls out. And I think they're going to swing Trump's way if Bobby doesn't stay in the race.
Let's talk about the debates after the convention. We, you know, they've agreed in theory, you know, I never believe it until the week before, because everybody negotiates up to the last minute and fights about what they want, especially when you don't have the commission running it. And now we're back to having the networks running. And having been at the networks, I know what those negotiations are like, because everybody wants blood from the well to get their own way. Do you guys think that anything could happen this week that could change who debates?
I think that, you know, again,
I mean, do you think there's any movement on the floor?
I'm like Kevin, I don't know what's going to happen, but like I said before, the legacy media doesn't operate in a mockingbird way unless they're told to. So I don't, you know, there's talk of Hillary coming up. There's all kind of talk out there. So we'll see what happens. I don't see how Waltz can debate J.D. Vance. How do you do that? I mean, it's obvious he shirked his deployment. All his behaviors will come out. How does he debate J.D. Vance? You know, and J.D. has his issues, of course, and connections that are questionable. But he did serve in the Marine Corps in the sandbox. So how do you debate? I don't know.
I think both Trump and J.D. Vance are going to do exceptional. Mm-hmm. If they stay on message, they're going to do exceptional. I don't think any of the other candidates on the other side even have the capacity to really drill down on what their position is on any issue, because we know what their positions are. I think if Trump just stays right in a sweet spot, saying, you know, you locked up 1,000 black men, I freed black men. I mean, just imagine him saying something like that. Like when it comes to criminal justice in this country, you know, my first day on the job, I did first step. Your first day on the job, you locked up thousands of black Americans. I mean, just think about that.
That's powerful. Yeah,
that's powerful. And if I was on the other side, I would be quite nervous of that, because he does have the capacity to talk about some positive things that he accomplished as the president that that relieved a lot of the pressure that was on Americans in this country. I mean, from Arkansas to Nebraska to the Midwest, all across this country, that's what they're looking for. So if he stays right there, he wins no matter what. He doesn't have to pull anything out of his bag. He just stays right there. I've been fighting to bring down inflation, but let me tell you what inflation was when I was the president. Was the street safer in America when I was the president? Absolutely. Was food? All he has to do is, if he could just master that and stay out of the personal realm, he'll win this hands down.
All right, let's go to commercial, come back, and let's talk about the preparations. I thought it was very interesting that Trump invited Tulsi Gabbard to come down, and I think it's interesting in terms of what Homeland Security just recently did to her.
Our world is changing rapidly. Many crucial systems we depend upon are collapsing. And the most important system that is failing is the food supply.
Mr. President, this council is more than aware of the multiple challenges and threats the world is facing today. But the threat of famine, people starving slowly to death, must be a red line.
You know, these food prices are going to keep going up and up, and they're going to keep feeding excuse after excuse, narrative after narrative.
Yeah.
Where you're going to have to get off that treadmill and start getting more autonomous with your own food growing.
You want to make sure that you can eat, because frankly, food is the biggest issue as we are going through these transitions.
But amidst the chaos, there is a path to resilience. Marjorie Wildcraft is the female leader of the survival and preparedness movement. Marjorie has taught millions of people how to grow an abundance of food in a grid-down situation, even if you have no experience, are older, or out of shape.
I've spent decades finding the fastest, easiest, and funnest ways for the average person to be able to grow a lot of food. I've created a step-by-step process that's so simple that even kids to elders have been using it in order to grow a lot of their own food. And you can too, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape.
Growing your own food is like printing your own money.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Okay, I'm back with my colleagues, Bill and Todd Wood, and our guest, Kevin Jenkins, who's a friend of the networks. Let's talk about Tulsi Gabbard. I was pretty blown away in the last couple, 10 days or so when she found out that she was on the quiet skies list. And folks, if you don't know what that is, it basically means that you're on a terrorist list. And she came in, she was overseas, she came in, there were about five legs of her flight before she got home. And she had, I guess, maybe five different teams on the legs of the flight at the airport, inside the airport with dogs, as well as people flying on and basically surveilling her. And when I, heard the story, here we have a, former member of Congress. We have a former presidential candidate. And I'm thinking to myself, have these people completely lost their minds after everything that Trump has been through? And now that they're going to do this to somebody like Gabbard? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Well, we're a full-blown fascist country. I mean, that's what we are becoming. And this is what I think Trump and all of us are attempting to fight back and push back against. I think the military-industrial complex, I think the deep state, they have lost their minds. They completely have lost their minds. And I'm so happy these things are being exposed. Listen, all of you know I've been on a disinformation 12 list, and I'm probably surveilled every day. I'm all right with that. I understand that. I understand the business of that. But to do that to this young lady who was a presidential candidate and is in the military, fighting to preserve our sovereignty, to do that to her, that means that government is completely out of control. And that's why they have to go. I mean, just that alone is enough not to vote for that party ever again. I mean, just think about that. I mean, to use those kind of resources on against an American citizen says a lot about where we are in this country. And I think that's where we need to be focused on. How did we get here? And why did we get here? And why did we allow this to happen? America, all of us should be upset about this and pushing back against this kind of stuff. This kind of surveillance and this deep state operation that they've been engaging, probably with all of us, because we do this stuff and we talk about this stuff, needs to be stopped. It needs to be stopped. And I think that she's going to be a very important figure in the future in this country, because she's seen it. She understands it. She's felt it. She stood up against it. And to have her in the government, or to have her even advising Trump, is a really good thing for him, because he needs that balance. He needs that kind of thinking when he's out there articulating, especially debating the candidate he's going to be debating.
So the message that's going to come out of Chicago is, we are united. At the United Center, I mean, just to, you know, throw that in, with a level of hypocrisy and delusion. I mean, this is an illusion. This is the top of the ticket, Kamala Harris, who did not get any votes in the presidential primary season in 2020, because she dropped out on December, I think it was December 3rd, 2019. So she didn't even make it to Chicago, to Ohio or New Hampshire. Or New Hampshire. So she gets past this baton. Do you guys think that anybody in America cares? Because I certainly think that they have usurped the process here. And I don't know. I think that they have really screwed around with the system, where they can break every rule, because the Biden administration has violated so many laws and has governed with litigation, that they just felt that they could do it again when they passed the baton to her. To me, this is a real issue, but Kevin, you know, I don't know if it precedes or supersedes, you know, immigration. I don't know if it supersedes, you know, inflation, but I certainly think of it as a continuation of the Biden administration breaching laws all over the place.
I think that's how everybody sees it. I don't think they fooled anyone. I think this rebranding is not working. I mean, because it's not dealing with the real core issues. It's not about us being happy. It's about us getting America on the right track. I think Americans are just not fooled. I'm talking about across the line. I think some of us are, the independents are probably being quiet about when they're going to cast their vote and when they're going to decide that. But mm-hmm. I think majority of America is not fooled by this. And this whole unification thing, if they're going to push that narrative, it's just going to go flat. People want tangibles. Now, they're going to come to the table with tangibles, but they're going to be redressed tangibles that they try to address or push out into the marketplace for the last 30 or 40 years. Nobody's buying. I think people have fatigue with that now. I think people are like, you know what? Sounds cute, looks good, smells good, but we're not buying it.
So I want to go. I mean, Kevin, you're in New Jersey and Florida. Todd's in Connecticut and Florida. Bill, you're in Georgia. What are you guys hearing, if anything, about the fact that the Democratic convention is being held this year?
Go ahead, Bill.
actually, little about the convention itself, other than the fact that people are already anticipating that it's going to be this, I'll call it a sort of a contrived gala, if they can make it that way. There was a report, I believe, just this morning, saying that there was literally PR firms out working, if I can bring this up, to, pardon me, there we go, working to, you know, get influencers, to get celebrities to weigh in and be part of this thing so that they can have that attention. And if you recall, Harris had a rally here 1 week before Trump's rally here in Atlanta. And I actually attempted to attend. And as I was approaching the venue, I could literally, wasn't over yet, but I could see people leaving. And I wondered why. Well, later it came out that people had been, you know, attracted by the celebrity. And it was essentially a free concert with people that they would normally have to pay hundreds of dollars, perhaps per seat for. A lot of people attended that. But then, you know, they get into the political speeches and people are backing off and saying, OK, we're done. Let's go get out of here before we have to face the parking and the traffic. I'm wondering if they're going to see those same kinds of dynamics during parts of the DNC, or if they, you know, if in fact they're going to be able to pay for enough celebrities to keep people engaged and the attention where they wish it to be. It'd be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, the Black entertainment class is being pushed back against. I mean, that's not working anymore. I mean, we don't take them serious at all. Their political, you know, understanding is, you know, nobody's paying attention. I'm going to be nice on your show. No one's paying attention to it. The Black entertainment class is in jeopardy. It's not the Black entertainment class of the past. Harry Belafonte, Sidney Poitier, you know, people that had they were conscious. They knew what they wanted for America. They wanted to bring America together. This Black entertainment class is a proxy for the Democratic Party. And we all know that. It's all out in the street now. I'm telling you, it's everywhere, Christine. Todd.
So is the white entertainment class.
Yeah, right.
I mean, but you had
you mean people like Taylor Swift?
Well, you had. Did you see the stuff for Swifties for Trump come out?
Yeah, I didn't see that, but you know, people are not buying it. I'm telling you, people are like done with that. But they don't want to. This is the thing that I'm probably going to see. I'm going to watch this convention. I don't normally watch them anymore, but I'm going to watch this one because I know what they're going to do. They're going to bring out all of the old dinosaurs to try to unify a group of young people that aren't listening.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to bring Bill Clinton out, done. Obama, done. Hillary, done. They're not going to bring any young people that really speak to what's happening in America. What they did at the Republican convention was brilliant.
I agree.
They brought America inside.
It was the best convention that I've covered since 1980.
I got to tell you, I was so impressed. And I don't watch conventions, guys. They bore me. But I just wanted to see it. You know, and I said, okay, let me watch this. Every single step was orchestrated brilliantly to bring America together, not to divide us, but to bring us together, to have a bigger conversation under that tent. You know what the Democrats are going to do? They're going to do what they always do. Just vote for us because we care. And everybody's not buying that nonsense anymore.
Mm-hmm. I was very encouraged in the last few days. We happened to be outside of Atlanta, significantly outside, most of the way up to Tennessee for a portion of a day, and happened to talk to some younger people. And I was floored at how much some of these folks knew. They were well briefed. They'd done their homework. They knew what the issues were. They knew what the choices were. I was very encouraged, and I'm hoping that maybe we'll see that sort of thing play out with other folks that are perhaps might have, you know, ignored them or given them less credence in the past about whether they were paying attention to politics and the future of the country. But boy, was I encouraged to hear what I heard, you know, this week.
Yeah. You know, Jim Kunstler, who's a friend of the show, who's Christine's interviewed, Northeastern, he put out an article with this recently, and I found it interesting just to show that it's coming back.
Well, I was, you know, I expected that Hillary would have a role, you know, at the convention, but I don't know. There's something odd about this, knowing that, I guess Obama will put his blessing on Kamala. Hillary will do her, you know, it should have been me song. Bill will get out there and talk about, you know, Kumbaya in the DNC. Try to
check out all the young ladies.
Check out the chicks, as people say.
You can see him like scan, you know, it's hilarious.
Yeah, he does. He does. But it's like I've already been to those conventions. I've been to all the conventions since 1980. I mean, I've covered them all. It's there's nothing exciting about it because Kamala's not exciting. And Tim Walz is, you know, I got news for him. He's short on the brain power. He really is. I feel like, you know, have we dumbed down within the Democratic Party? When you really think about it, these guys didn't play by the rules. And they could have had Bobby.
Yeah.
It could have been Bobby versus Trump. Now it may be a possibility, you know, if Trump and Bobby ever got their act together, if Trump wins, I think Bobby would be a great wrecking ball. Give him the HHS. Let him dismantle the whole thing and take on gain of function, WHO, and everything else.
I think Trump would do that. I actually believe that if the right conversation was had, he would do it because he's going to need that. Because one of the things that I tell my friends, this tyranny will never stop. They are pissed that they have not finally they have not finally won this battle.
Oh, yeah.
To destroy us. They are pissed. They are angry. So they're going to keep coming back every quarter, every year, every second to try to distract us so they can put in place their evil plans. But I got to tell you, I think it would be great for Trump and Bobby to sit down and have a bigger conversation. I think they probably share a lot of the same values when it comes to those things. So I think if that's a possibility, I think all of us should be encouraging that so they can have that conversation. Leave all of the pundits out. Leave all of the political operatives out. Have a real conversation about the future of this country. Where can you go wrong with that?
Well, I think Bill is right that we're in a time of choosing, and what we need to do is out these people and show who they really are, and really shine a spotlight on all of these operatives who are saying one thing, doing another, because they'll come back in the future, as Kevin said, if you don't. So I think
they keep recycling. I mean, they just keep recycling themselves. And I think that we need to take our time and sit back and see who these people are so we can react and respond to them accordingly. Because right now they're just in this, they're in the seams now. You know, they're playing both sides. They're trying to see how this thing lands. But I think we need to get more serious about that, because these agencies that have been captured, they're moving forward with their plans. They're never going to stop. And we can't get lazy. I gave a speech a couple of weeks ago in Florida, and I said, if you think that this is over, if you think that they're stopping, if you think they're really listening to us, you're out of your minds. That's not how they play. That's not how they play. You know what they say, Bill, in those rooms? I've been in those rooms. Guess what? They'll get tired soon. Let's keep pushing our plans down the road. They're not going to fight too long. We're going to distract them with something else. Let's just keep our plans going down the road. And that's how they think.
I think you're right. I think the other thing is they have a playbook that they've rolled out again and again and again, and you begin to see the same facets surface.
That's right.
Year over year, you mentioned earlier, you know, same players. Look at Eric Holder. We thought he was off doing something completely different, and all of a sudden he surfaces, you know, attached to, you know, Kamala and, you know, and the other processes. And it's like, holy mackerel, who's next? You know, what's going on? I do think that, you know, the players that we've seen in the past are going to roll out. I'm hearing the same things that Todd mentioned. You know, is there some reason why they're all of a sudden turning, it seems to be, on some of the facets of Harris? And is that an opening for someone else? Is it? Are we getting ready for an odd replay in some ways, you know?
Well, Bill, combine that with bird flu and monkeypox and, you know, war in Ukraine, Middle East, you know, invasion of Russia. I mean, geez.
I'm sorry, Bill, Kevin, I walked into there.
I think, Bill, you're correct. I think you're right. I mean, You're spot on. I love the energy. I got to tell you, I love these kinds of seasons because you hear all of the energy. You hear what people are saying. I was out last night at a art gallery show with my wife last night, and all they were talking about what was going to happen in this election. I thought that was pretty interesting because I haven't heard people talk about anything in a long time outside of, like, you know, the normal stuff. But they all were talking about it. Now, I didn't agree with them, but I was glad they talked about it. And I was a part of the conversation, and we were able to have an open dialogue about what we believe should be done or what kind of support these communities should be having around the country. And they're not getting any support now. Businesses are closing in all of these blue states. People are running from these blue states like their hair is on fire. The economic situation from California to New Jersey to Chicago, and all, I mean, it is in dire straits. You just got to walk these neighborhoods to see the pain that these people are in. They're overtaxed. Right. They don't get representation at all from their kind. So if you're a black mayor in a black city in America, your people are starving because you are buying into a political philosophy that is destroying the future opportunities for them to gain prosperity. So anything that you do public policy wise that is working on the behalf of another group, you're screwed. So in black America, that's what's happening now. This is what they're saying. Enough of that shit. Excuse my language. Enough of that.
I want to bring something up because I want everybody to keep their eyes on this. 4 years ago, on the night, which would have been the fourth day of when Trump was supposed to be speaking at the Republican convention at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that day, Kamala Harris did something that had never been done before in the history since I've been alive covering conventions. She actually gave a pre-buttal to what Trump was expected to say that night of the convention. So this would have been Thursday night. And in the course of that, so this is August 2020, Fauci is then at the White House. He's pushing, you know, we're going to get a handle on this. Everybody stay home, 6 feet. The churches are shut down. The liquor stores are open. And she talked about the word, she used the words, the PREDICT Project, which is the gain of function program for the Frankenstein science that underlines the business, that creates the business model for the vaccinations. We now know through the documents from the Biden White House as of September 2021 that the Biden the Biden-Harris administration from the Office of Science and Technology want to have a mandated seasonal vaccination ongoing for all of the coronaviruses that these coronavirus hunters collect, and they figure out that those viruses are transmissible to human beings. It's the underlying business model for the pharmaceutical companies. Do you guys think that anybody cares? Because I think they should, because when we talk about that these people want to keep this train wreck going, that's the business model. And the fact that she hasn't been, I guess, exposed for that when she was briefed about the PREDICT Project before August of 2020 when she gave that speech, I think that there has to be more of a spotlight on her. And I don't think that even going into the debates that my mates at the legacy media are smart enough or care enough about even asking that question. And I think it should be, it to me, it is as important as the how are you going to take care of your family, as you said, Kevin. The inflation, the price of butter, bread, and milk, as well as whether or not we have a terrorist attack here because of everybody that's come across the border. But I think that if she gets elected, this capture, and you know, Trump calls it the deep state, Bobby calls it the agency capture. But I think we will have another roundabout of what we went through in 20 and 21. So to me, one of the most important questions for the American public is, do you guys want to see this ever happen again? Because I think universally Americans would say, no way, Jose. But I don't think the spotlight has been on Kamala Harris in terms of her partnership in the Biden administration to keep this going. Because by her silence, she's complicit in this.
State-ran news will not bring that up as a question at all. Majority of the state-ran news entities in this country, I say all of them probably, I say majority, all of them are ran by the deep state. They're all ran by Big Pharma. That's where they get their money from. They're never going to ask a serious question at that level anyway. I think you're right. They should, but they won't. So, you know, state-ran news is over. I mean, we will never get anything from them ever again. And I think that's why, you know, companies like yours and shows like yours and what you're doing, Todd, is brilliant for America. This is where we're having the real conversations. Nobody's looking to, you know, state-ran TV anymore. The people that are looking at that are the people that buy into those lies. And we can't do anything about it. But I believe majority of America has left the building. They've left the building, not listening to them anymore. And they're not even taking this. You know why they're looking at this debate? They just want to see how Trump handles himself. I think they already know what the other candidate's going to do. I already think they know. They're looking at how is Trump going to play this out. That's really interesting. They're not looking at the other. They want to see if Trump is disciplined enough, because everybody wants an excuse to waffle. But if he does this in a solid way, doesn't matter how many questions or what questions they ask him, he's going to win that debate just by being there and being focused on the issues. And I don't think the state-ran TV gives a heck about any of those important questions. I guarantee you, they're not going to even ask real serious questions because they don't want her to falter in the middle of trying to explain why she was on this side at last week, and now she's saying this week. I don't think it's going to be a serious debate at all. I don't believe it at all.
I think you're right. And it's not just what Trump is going to do; it's also what the other side is going to do because they're desperate. So it's really a knife fight right now.
Yep.
I think too, if you look at, you mentioned the impact of mainstream media versus other types of media, like what we're participating in at this moment, this didn't exist the way it does today. Not with the breadth, not with the personnel, not with the ability to gather and disseminate information. And so I think that part of what's gotten people, and I do believe that they are much better informed. You can see that in the very low rate of folks continuing to take boosters and other things, the pushback that you heard both in patients and doctors. I think they're better. They're better prepared this time. We're already surfacing the data that's coming to us regarding this new Mpox and everything else. And you can see that the, you know, some of the dynamics appear very similar again. One of our big call signs is, you know, we're not going to get fooled again. I mean, we're not in a position to say whether something's good, bad, or indifferent, but every piece of information that needs to get to folks, I think they're finding ways to get it. And I believe they can make this time logical, smart decisions that might have been a lot more challenging 4 or 5 years ago.
The monkeypox scare is not working. We talked about that last night at the gallery last night, Christine. Mm-hmm. It's not working. People are basically laughing at it. Oh, here we go again. This is very interesting. This is like, here we go again. They're not going to fool us twice. We're not doing it because they've seen so much loss.
That's true. They have. They've seen their loved ones who were vaccinated die and ill. And I agree with you. And people have to understand. I mean, I've been going to Africa since I was, for decades, okay, since I was a kid. But in the Congo, not very many people go to the Congo. I've been to the Congo. But, I mean, that is not exactly – you don't go into back caves where you're going to find coronaviruses on a safari. You don't go to the Congo. You've got to have a reason to go. I went there to cover the war. But that is where most of the monkeypox is breaking out. Are there pockets that are going to be in Kenya? Yes. These are very, very, very poor regions. They don't have sanitation. It is contagious. There is a higher rate of dying, but it's because there's no sanitation.
That's right.
And there's no medical, mm-hmm. and it's very difficult to get to these people and everything like that. So, mm-hmm. but what they do want to do, and this is what I find to be interesting, you hear out of the WHO, this is Tedros and the boys over there, they want to do all this testing now. So where they wanted to do all the testing of everybody every hour of the day with the COVID pandemic, now that it sounds as if they want to use, everybody in Africa is going to be tested and surveilled. And I'm thinking,
well, they're building new bioweapons, Christine.
That's right.
It's a clinical trial that is without informed consent. So, I mean, that's what's happening. And in Dr. Victory, we interviewed, and we're going to have her on the show next on the Georgia show. I mean, she says, don't forget, this is a disease transmitted by gay sex, primarily between men. It is not an aerosol disease. Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say, again, you can spot these things by the parallels between different instances. What did Dr. Burke say when bird flu began to be a concern across the U.S.? We should be testing every herd every week. Testing.
It's
coincidence.
I don't think so. Gain of function research, so they know it works and doesn't. That's all it is.
That's right.
And to be able to prove, many of these tests can have plenty of false positives. Oh, if we get one guy out in Wyoming who's got bird flu or Mpox, but they also changed the name to get rid of the, organ grinder memes that were going to start popping up about monkeypox. they get outed with this stuff. You can spot the parallels. So.
I mean, what's happening in Africa, the assault on the African body in Africa is a big issue. Right. And I think the African continent needs to pay attention to this. And I think over the last couple of years, they start paying attention and pushing back to against the WHO in a big way. But there are so many poor countries in Africa that don't have the capacity to do that, that the corruption, will take over. And those people that live in those countries will be guinea pigs. And I think you're right, Todd. This is what this is, setting up another bioweapon. And I think Africa is on the front line. And I think we should be having a bigger conversation with African leaders about how they push back and learn from what we learned, and probably expose the corruption that's going over there that will allow this to happen. I mean, how do you let Bill Gates back into your country? How do you let the World Health Organization back into your country? I'm like, what kind of nonsense is that? This guy is evil. The World Health Organization is evil. The CD. I mean, how do you let those groups come back into your country?
Brian Kemp just held a fundraiser in Sea Island with Bill Gates. So we let him in our country.
We can't get him out of our country.
Hey, Todd, is that true, Todd?
Sure fact. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What is it about Georgia that it always is this epicenter? We have next you're going to hear Klaus Schwab having an insect, an insect dinner down one of these places. For
well, Bezo actually eats insects. I've seen pictures of with insects, you know.
Well, I did too in survival school, but they're not good.
Yeah, I mean, maybe chocolate covered ants once in a while, but you know.
Every once in a while with a glass of wine, right?
So I want to bring up the topic of money, all right? Because I asked some people over the weekend when I was talking to folks in Chicago, I said, okay, so how much is this convention going to cost? And they said it's about $94 million is the number that they've put out there. So this is the first year that we will see in American politics almost over $10 billion spent in our political cycle. The first $1 billion, I think, was 2008. So how does that play out in America? Because we know that most of the money's coming for the big donors, and we know that it doesn't cost as much today as it did relative to when it was just the three traditional networks to buy commercial time, CBS, NBC, ABC, and you can throw in CNN. But before we ended up living in the world of cable the way we have it today, it doesn't cost what it used to cost relative to the networks then.
I don't think people are even aware of what you're saying. I don't think people are paying attention to the cost. It's not been brought out into the marketplace for a bigger conversation. I think if they did find out about it, they would be like, wow, you could spend $94 million, or you can spend close to $10 billion or $5 billion while we're starving. And it gets right back to that.
Exactly.
Right? I can't eat, but you're putting on this show to convince me that, you know, you're supporting what I'm going through, or you have a plan to get me out of what I'm going through. I just think people, I got to tell you, COVID was brilliant for America. I know it was horrible. I understand it. I lived through it. I fought against it. But let me tell you something. America is much more awakened than it's ever been on these agencies and these people that have been devising these plans to strip us of not just our ability to earn, but our ability to freaking live. I think people know a lot more about the CDC. They know a lot more about the FDA. They know a lot more about the operationalization of how Big Pharma has now taken over our government. I think they understand the World Health Organization. I really believe they at least can identify and say these guys are bad actors.
That's kind of what the first Trump term was. It ripped the mask off. They were not expecting that, and the mask got ripped off. So it accelerated their plans, in my opinion. And you're right, maybe they got over their skis. I don't know.
Yeah, the military industrial complex. You have more people talking about the prison industrial complex, the military industrial, people that I would never expect having to have those kind of conversations. Mm-hmm. So I'm listening. I'm like, well, what the hell do you know about the military? In my mind, I'm saying that like, wow, people are out there having that conversation. Every time I come into a local city, I try to go to a local bar and talk to people. That's the thing I do. I won't go to the fancy. Everybody expects me to go to the fancy bars, right, Todd? I go right to a neighborhood bar and I will listen and I will talk to them and I'll buy them a drink. And then I'll go to another city and I'll do the same exact thing. When I'm in Newark, I go to a place that everybody goes to and I listen to what they say. And they're a lot friendlier than they used to be about the conversations. They're more open to having a conversation about Trump. They're more open to talking about the economy. I did not see that 7 years ago, guys.
What about censorship?
Well, censorship is a big issue, but they believe they've been censored anyway. They talk about censorship too. But the other thing they're talking about is the failure of their local governments. Now, that is something that I do my own polls, guys. Mm-hmm. Now, that is something that I'm hearing a lot about. We got to kick those bums out. Look at the conditions of our neighborhoods. Look at the conditions. People are paying more attention to local politics now. I think that's a good thing for us.
All right, guys, we're running out of time. Bill, Todd, any last words?
I'm good. Bill, you got anything?
I think we covered a lot of great ground. I think I think the key is we're hitting all the right topics for folks to start paying attention to, and now they got to keep goggles on for the next couple of months.
That's right.
And I want to encourage everybody to watch the convention this week, and because I want you to watch how hypocrisy is produced. Because that's what I think we're going to see on stage. We're going to see some really bad actors come back and try to sell a narrative that doesn't exist. With that, thank you all for watching.
And let me just say, Christine, I know you'll put out a lot of good coverage this week. So please check out Christine's reporting all week because she's on it. So thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys. And we'll see you soon. Thank you, Kevin, for joining us.
No problem.